weeks already scrapped. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and it's great to have you along today on the program. We're going to talk about a couple of important issues. First, we're going to speak with Jamie Dean from World Magazine about a couple of the stories that she has written about. She is just coming back from Japan, and so we want to get a little bit of an update from her about what is taking place in Japan. We've been so fortunate to work together with the folks from World Magazine. Last week, we were visiting with Mindy Bells. And Mindy had just returned back from Afghanistan, and so we got a firsthand analysis of what was taking place in Afghanistan, both good and bad. And then we talked about that. We used that to segue into some of the foreign policy discussions that were taking place in this country, and specifically among the GOP candidates. And now today we've got Jamie Dean on the program, and she's just getting back from Japan. And so we get to have this opportunity again to get a firsthand update on what's taking place there, you know, a firsthand analysis of what's going on. And so just really fortunate to have folks like this from World Magazine available to us, because otherwise, you know, you'd be listening to a radio station coming out of Greenville, South Carolina, where the radio host would be sitting here giving you my opinion about what's taking place in these countries. But graciously, the Lord has enabled us to have a relationship with World Magazine so that we can get these firsthand updates on what's taking place. So I'm really glad for the relationship that we have. Very gracious folks there from World Magazine that are willing to come on and to speak about these important issues. Second thing with Jamie, to stick with a little bit of an international flavor, I want to get a little bit of her perspective on what's taking place in Mexico right now, because Jamie actually lived in Mexico, I think, for about a year as part of some mission work that was being done down there through the church that she was attending. So I think her perspective on what's taking place in Mexico would be interesting as well. And then finally, I want to bring that back home here to the to what's taking place politically, because Jamie wrote a story about the primary coming up here in the state of South Carolina and what is taking place as a result of that primary. Now, if you've been following that at all, you know that these primaries have been being moved because they're trying to leapfrog each other to get in here first and jump ahead of each other. And so we want to just get what is the latest on this particular issue or what's going on there. And so all three of those things are what we're going to talk about. Second half of the program, after we have brought it back home to political analysis of what's taking place, I want to spend the second half of the program talking a little bit about the GOP debate last night. I don't know if you got a chance to see it or not, but CNN hosted this one. Anderson Cooper, 360, you know, did this one. And so he was the moderator of this event. And so it was pretty good. It was pretty interesting. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in the second half of the program. Probably going to spend a little bit of time of zeroing in on Ron Paul, because I've been wanting to talk about a couple of issues related to Ron Paul ever since he had reportedly won the Value Voter Summit straw poll that took place. And that's why I've been zeroing in on him, because that would tend to make Evangelicals think that Ron Paul is much more of a viable candidate for evangelicals. Also, coupled with that, Dr. Paul's been running ads here in the upstate of South Carolina, talking about how he is a viable candidate for evangelicals. Specifically, he's been touting his pro-life record. And so these types of things, just I think it's now warranting to just look at Ron Paul's candidacy from a biblical perspective and say, you know, is this really something that Christian conservatives should be interested in supporting? Is there some issues here that we need to take into consideration? That's what I'll talk about in the second half of the program. With that, Jamie, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Well, thanks. It's great to be here.
Jamie, how about a little bit of a summary on what's taking place in Japan? I understand from Warren Cole Smith that you have just returned from Japan, and just an update on how the recovery is going there after the tsunami and the meltdown and all of the other difficulty they've been having most recently.
Well, sure. My trip to Japan took place right around the six-month mark. You know, the earthquake and tsunami happened on March 11th of this year, so the six-month anniversary was actually September 11th of this year. And I was there around that time and kind of seeing how the progress was going. And, you know, I think that Japan is such an interesting place. It's actually easy to sort of forget Japan in some ways. It's not a Haiti. It's not a third world country that's racked by all these other problems that sort of keep it in the news. But it is a very needy place in many ways. I mean, this tsunami, of course, as your listeners will remember, was just colossal. I mean, really difficult to compare it to many other disasters over the last half century in many ways. And so they are still very much reeling from that disaster. Now, they've done a great job of cleanup. I mean, you know, they have gotten the debris collected, they've crushed it, they've separated it. The Japanese are very disciplined and very focused, and they've done a very good job of cleanup. The sad thing is they've really not been able to get to building back what was lost. And a lot of that is just because they're not sure where to build. I mean, you can stand on hills and look down where towns once used to stand and see the water coming in from the tide, covering where the town used to be. The tsunami actually lowered the ground in places. So there are lots of towns where rebuilding probably just isn't feasible. And so a lot of those people who lived in those areas are trying to figure out what are they going to do now. Some of them are in temporary housing. Some of them are with families. But there's a lot of work that remains for not only the Japanese government, but for the aid workers that are coming into that situation and trying to help.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the issue with the nuclear plant that was there as well, I don't know exactly what they're going to do with that. Do they just end up sealing that thing up and then it just becomes a monument to a meltdown, or what actually happens to that?
Well, they're still actually trying to do the final steps of sealing it off. I mean, they're still in the process of closing that reactor down. They do think they've contained the immediate danger of spewing radiation, but they're still trying to close it down. And so I don't think that there's any thought that that particular reactor would ever reopen in any time, you know, in the near future. The area surrounding that reactor is still totally sealed off, and so you have all these ghost towns, essentially, where people just had to basically pick up and leave, and they can't return probably for decades. I mean, some people have been allowed to go back in very short increments of time to maybe get really important documents or something like that, but people aren't going to be moving back into those towns anytime soon. So that is going to remain a very long-term disaster, and of course, people that live in that area and also really, you know, miles outside of that area all the way up to some of the worst tsunami damage are worried about that radiation and how much of it did get out and how much of it is in the air, how much of it is in the ground. And there's hot spots that are popping up in places that people didn't realize were affected. So I think that, again, is going to be something to watch over a long period of time to see how bad that actually is.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have a sizable military presence in Japan, right? Has that been affected by either one of these two disasters?
It really hasn't. I mean, The only effect is that the military stepped in and helped Japan in the days right after the earthquake and tsunami. They helped quite a bit with rescue and recovery and also with delivering supplies to the affected area. And the Japanese acknowledged they were a huge help. Other than that, their presence there is not affected so much.
Hmm. Well, let's jump to another international story that you've written about as well. You've written about the Mexican drug violence that's taking place, obviously, right at our doorstep on the Mexican border, Mexican-U.S. border. And I know that you had lived there in Mexico. Tell us a little bit about what's going on right now, drug violence-wise, and, you know, are we making any progress here whatsoever in this situation?
Well, you know, I think that this story really came to light in a very unusual and unexpected way last week with this news of the foiled attempt to assassinate the Saudi ambassador in Washington, D.C. Now, that sounds like there's a strange connection there, but there is a connection. You know, there was this Iranian plot to assassinate the Saudi ambassador to the U.S. in a restaurant in Washington, and the way they found out was that a contact in the Houston area actually contacted someone who he thought was part of a Mexican drug cartel. So this U.S. citizen who holds an Iranian passport contacted someone in Houston who he thought was in a Mexican drug cartel and said, can you do this assassination for us? Yeah. Well, that contact actually turned out to be a paid informant for the federal government, so he turned this guy over. But it was a really interesting moment where everyone should have at least woken up and said, hey, look, there are organized drug cartels right here in the U.S. We've known that, but this was a very startling reminder of that, that in cities, especially in Texas, cartels are very entrenched. They have operational, you know, headquarters in these cities. And so this is very much a reality that is continuing to unfold. You know, I was down in the Houston area last week and went all the way down to the border. And what I was hearing, especially from local law enforcement, is that they are seeing a real change in the kind of people that they're seeing come across the border, a much more violent element, a much more criminal element. They're catching a lot more drugs that are coming across, and they're really concerned that the tide is shifting in a lot of ways and that there are some serious problems that are continuing to unfold and that they could grow even worse and bring violence not only on that border area but also up to these cities in America where these drugs are flowing to. So we've got a very serious problem on our hands.
Mm-hmm. And coupled with that news about the attempted assassination attempt by the cartels, by Iran via the cartels, let me put it that way, there was also, of course, the Fast and Furious debacle that more and more information seems to be coming to light. There's now been subpoenas have been issued. This seems like it's not going away. It seems only to be getting deeper and deeper. And Eric Holder, the U.S. Attorney General, of course, seems to be this is getting a little bit closer to home for him. Do you agree?
I definitely do. I mean, I think there's real questions about what he knew and when, and I think that you're going to see Congress really continue, hopefully, to continue to press him on that issue about this weapons program, how much he knew, and what kind of damage it really caused. You know, this is something that we don't really talk about that much, and it's really surprising. You know, as I was back in Texas last week, you know, I was just kind of surprised all over again to be reminded at how serious this issue of cartels and drugs are. You know, I was at a border checkpoint about 60 miles north of the Mexican border in South Furious, Texas, this small town with this border patrol checkpoint that's kind of the final point before you go north. And there was a sign out front of that checkpoint that said that since January, at just that checkpoint, border patrol agents had seized 290,000 pounds of narcotics just at that checkpoint. Huh. So you can only imagine what's flowing and the ranches around that checkpoint. And so, yes, I mean, Fast and Furious is a reminder that the violence is escalating, that the drugs are still a serious problem, and it's something that we really need to, I think, retune our focus on.
Hmm. There was one more international story, actually, that I wanted to just see if you had an update for us. I know a while back you wrote a story about the pastor in Iran who was scheduled to be put to death. Do you have an update on what the current situation is with him?
Well, my understanding is that his attorney is still waiting to hear on a verdict in that case.
Mm.
The last that I heard was that there was some concern that the Iranian court might be kind of inventing new charges against Youssef. Youssef Nadakarni is his name. There was some concern that perhaps they were going to come up with some charges that he was a spy, some other things that had never been discussed before. And so his attorney was very concerned that that might come into play. There's no new update on that. His attorney says he hasn't seen new charges filed against him. But everyone's very concerned that, you know, this could go against him, that he could be actually hanged for apostasy. So something that your listeners and our readers want to continue to follow and pray for this pastor as his life really does hang in the balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember those trumped-up charges added just a couple weeks ago, and it was seemed to be so blatantly and obviously trumped up because there was no mention of those in the original indictment against him that was read against him. There was no mention of rape or some of these other charges that he's been added on to him. So it seemed as if they were trying to deflect it from being a religious liberty issue to make it into something else. But it was obviously what it was from the very beginning. They were trying to squelch any sort of growth of Christianity in Iran at all. The broader picture, you know, we have that taking place, and then, of course, we had in Egypt, just dozens of Christians that had been killed, Coptic Christians. It seems that the persecution of Christianity throughout the Islamic world seems to be increasing. Is that just my perception of it, or do you think that that's an accurate perception of what's taking place?
I think that's an accurate perception. I mean, especially in a place like Egypt. I mean, Coptic Christians there never had it easy over the last 50 years or so, but persecution against them has definitely upticked since the Arab Spring and since the ouster of Hosni Mubarak in February. The military is now in rule in Egypt, and, you know, what the Christians there are seeing is that there's just no recourse when they are persecuted, when, you know, a Muslim mob comes and burns a church down, as they did on September 30th. There's no recourse. There's no punishment. And in the past, they at least had some recourse. And not only that, but when they marched, as you're talking about the incident last week where they actually marched through downtown Cairo to protest this, well, mm-hmm. The military turned on them, literally ran tanks, or at least armored vehicles, yes. Over protesters, killing them, mm-hmm. Shooting at them. So in Egypt, yes, I mean, it is definitely growing more serious. And so, you know, we have to look at this question of, you know, freedom alone doesn't bring freedom for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so we definitely do need to continue to watch what freedom will actually mean for Christians in a lot of these countries.
Mm. And, of course, from our perspective here in the United States, doing what we can to put pressure upon our own government, to put pressure upon them to stop this type of abuse of the Christians throughout those regions, trying to get Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and the State Department to speak up about these issues very clearly and to refuse to or hold back some of the assistance that we've offered until we get some sort of assurance from these folks that they are not going to allow this type of persecution to go forward, and to take some steps to rein it in. So there are some things we can do there. That's important, then, when we're talking about foreign policy and our involvement and those types of things. So let's switch to the story that you wrote about the Palmetto State here and the GOP presidential candidates coming here for the race in South Carolina. Give us a synopsis, if you would, please, of what's the timeline that's taking place now here in South Carolina, how it's been moved up, and just what, you know, your overall assessment of what this is going to look like for South Carolinians.
Yeah, well, of course, South Carolina is always a really important state to watch because it's one of the first primaries in the nation, first in the South. And as other states have been moving their primaries up, even in contradiction to, you know, Republican Party regulations, South Carolina is moving theirs up as well. So it won't be in early February. It'll be in late January instead. New Hampshire is actually even talking about bumping theirs into December. We'll have to see if that actually happens. But this process is definitely becoming more and more compressed. So it means that candidates have the pressure to get into these early states more and more. So you probably will be seeing more of these candidates in South Carolina in the coming weeks. And South Carolina, you know, of course, is also a very important state to watch because of listeners like yours. I mean, evangelical voters, lots of evangelical and conservative voters in South Carolina. And so what happens in South Carolina is important, you know, because it tells us a lot about what might happen more broadly in the South, and particularly in Florida, which has a primary shortly after South Carolina. So, you know, I talked to a lot of voters in South Carolina, and there seemed to be a real kind of hands up in the air about who people were going to support. Mm-hmm. I mean, something I mentioned in the story was that Rick Perry at the time seemed like kind of a natural for South Carolina. He's this Southerner who likes barbecue and has a lot of things in common, I guess, with some South Carolina voters. But there was kind of an ambivalence. I mean, people didn't say they wouldn't vote for him, but they didn't seem real enthused. And Herman Cain began to make his kind of surprise run to the top at that time as well. And people were saying at that point they liked Herman Cain but weren't sure that he could win. Now that he looks like he could, that may turn the tide for him. So all of that to say, you know, even though January is not that far away, it is in some sense a long time away, and people will still be making their decisions in the months to come.
Mm-hmm. It does seem like the pack is kind of crowded right now. Nobody has seemed to pull away with it as a leading candidate per se in that pack. In fact, the image that you have associated on World Magazine with your story shows all of them on bicycles, and all of the bicycles are all grouped together. There's not somebody way out in front of the rest of them. Of course, Perry has dropped way back now. Mitt Romney seems to be holding his own. Cain came from nowhere and has made a little bit of a surge, although I tend to think that that's probably not going to last. I kind of think that Newt Gingrich is all of a sudden we're going to see a little bit of a bump from Newt Gingrich. I think he does very well in the debates. I think Palin said last night that she thought that Newt Gingrich had done the best in the debate. Rick Santorum agrees with so many of the things we agree with, but for some reason doesn't get much traction at all. Just his own personality doesn't seem to, doesn't seem to resonate for some reason with the evangelicals like you would think it would. Michelle Bachmann did make a little bit of a splash, but I'm just not sure. She may experience a little bit more of a bump here in South Carolina as well. And then, as we're going to talk about in a few minutes, Ron Paul says some different things that portions of what he says resonates very well. Other parts of what he says, people go, you know, where'd that come from? So they like a little bit of what he says, but not everything that he says. So it's pretty. It certainly isn't boring. It's kind of interesting just to see as this whole pack tries to position and to see who's going to come out. Huntsman, I didn't even mention him.
Yeah.
I just don't think that he is playing well here in South Carolina. He comes across as a moderate, and, you know, I think people had it with like a McCain type of approach, and I don't think he's going to get any traction here whatsoever in the Palmetto State. So what do you think's going to go on here? You think somebody out of that pack's going to bump to the front? You think Cain or somebody like that is going to do really well here in South Carolina?
Well, you know, I mean, I think I have maybe some of the same thoughts that you might have about Cain, that he did get this sudden surge to the front, but it kind of reminds me of the sudden surge to the front that Rick Perry had when he entered the race. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Cain's surge to the front seems to indicate that people don't know who to be excited about. There's mm-hmm. so many choices. It's sort of like a menu at a bad Mexican restaurant. There's 50 choices, but no one really knows which one they want and if they're excited about any of them. And so, you know, it's so hard to say, you know, who's going to come to the top. I mean, a lot of people seem to think that on a very pragmatic level, at the last minute, South Carolina might go for a Mitt Romney, mm-hmm. Especially if someone like Jim DeMint were to endorse him again this year.
Right.
And so, you know, I think people are the people I talked to in South Carolina, at least, seem to think that South Carolina certainly wants a Republican to win the presidency next November, and they'll do what they have to put in the kind of person that they think could do that. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of people who would like to vote for who they want to vote for because of their conscience, because of who they think is best. But we'll see how that kind of comes out when it all comes down to it next January.
Yeah, exactly. Once there's just two candidates that are running, then it's going to be a different ball game altogether. There's a lot of jockeying for position right now, but obviously it's the general sentiment, I think, in the conservative movement is anybody but Barack Obama. We're just trying to get the best person that can go up against Barack Obama, and I try to keep that in mind. That's another area where I don't think Kane or some of the other candidates will be able to hold their own against Barack Obama. They're not. I know they talk about Kane being pretty articulate, but I don't think he's in the same league with Barack Obama in a head-to-head debate. Where I do think a Mitt Romney, or even better would be a Newt Gingrich, really, they can hold their own against Barack Obama. They're pretty quick on their feet to be able to come up with an answer. That's a portion of it that needs to be considered, you know, in this contest. You know, we need to think about somebody that can actually parry. He seems to be horrible at it. He doesn't do very well at all. You know, he just last night he came across as being combative and wouldn't let somebody speak, and so did Santorum. I mean, it just came across as an angry individual wanting to duke it out there, making minor points into major points, and it just that type of thing just doesn't play very well, and they don't do themselves any service. I think people are turned off by a lot of that. So, but the other candidate seemed to be like a Newt Gingrich, seemed to be able to just answer the question, the actual question that was asked, and to do it in a way that was that was a good answer. You know, you let them go, that made a lot of sense. So anyway, it's going to be interesting, Jamie. I'm sure it won't be the last time we'll be talking with you about these things, but I wanted to thank you very much for giving us an update on all those different stories you're writing about, and thank you so much for the work you guys are doing there at World Magazine.
Well, thank you for having us. We always appreciate it.
Okay. That was Jamie Dean from World Magazine. Again, you can check out all the stories that we're talking about by just going out to World Magazine's website, and that website is very simply just www.worldmag.com. That's worldmag.com. By the way, they have some really good political cartoons out there. Sometimes one political cartoon, I mean, it can really just summarize and really just encapsulate a very complicated issue with just a very simple graphic. So they got a bunch of those out there that I really find interesting. We'll talk more about it when we come back from the break.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Since 1993, Auger Family Chiropractic has helped thousands of people just like you. Dr. Auger's office has helped them to discover a better way to experience health and healing. For over a century, chiropractic doctors have known that by God's design, the body possesses the ability to heal itself naturally. To learn how chiropractic adjustments enable the body to perform to its optimum and heal itself without the use of drugs or surgery, listen to Your Half Hour to Health with Dr. George Auger, Wednesday afternoons at 12:30 on Christian Talk 660.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Stevie B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Stevie B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Stevie B's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Stevie B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
School is back in session. Are you having trouble fitting in or standing out a bit too much? Does traditional high school no longer excite you? Is your current online school not meeting your expectations? Well, it's not too late to make a change. Provost Academy is a tuition-free online high school offering students personalized learning plans, a wide range of course options, and college credit opportunities. We are still enrolling for the second quarter, but you have to act now. For more information, text the word online to 84444 or visit sc.provostacademy.com or call 877-319-2010 and enroll today.
Hi, this is Josh Kimball. A group of 80 World War II veterans will travel to Washington, D.C. on Honor Flight November 8th. Honor Flight Upstate is a nonprofit volunteer organization dedicated to honoring Upstate South Carolina's World War II heroes. There is no cost to the veterans for this trip, thanks to generous private donations and volunteers. Would you consider volunteering or donating? If so, please visit HonorFlightUpstateSC.com. That's HonorFlightUpstateSC.com.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. I wanted to take a moment here on the broadcast to just do a little bit of some evaluation of a candidacy of one of the GOP candidates, the one I've been zeroing in on because he won the Values Voters Summit straw poll is Congressman Ron Paul. I know that a number of people, maybe a number in our listening audience, are strong Ron Paul supporters. Every time I say that way, strong Ron Paul supporters, I think about that line in the movie A Few Good Men. You may remember with Jack Nicholson, and he talks about that that part where he's, I eat breakfast 15 miles from men that want to kill me, you know, that type of thing by the Gitmo, Guantanamo Bay border. And then, of course, Tom Cruise is the JAG officer who's investigating the case of what's taking place there. And he says to Jack Nicholson, he says, did you make it clear? He says, crystal. You made it crystal clear. You know, is there any other kind? You know, this type of thing. Well, when you say a strong Ron Paul supporter, is there any other kind? It either seems that you're all in with Ron Paul and, you just think that all the other, there's nothing good about any of the other candidates whatsoever. And Ron Paul is the answer to all of our problems here in this country, or you feel that Ron Paul is just too wild and bizarre in some of his views, and you don't give him any credibility whatsoever. Well, I think that a couple of things have happened here with Ron Paul. One is he has tapped into the angst that there is in the country about the overspending of the U.S. government, about our debt, and about the problems that we face right now. And when I say tapped into it, I need to even give him more credit than that. More so than tapped into it, he has spoken about these issues for a long period of time, and it appears that in some way his time has come, that now in this particular presidential election upcoming in 2012, one of the major issues, maybe the major issue that is taking place in this campaign has to do with fiscal conservatism. And so people are concerned, and rightfully so, about the financial status of the country as a whole, about the that we're drowning in debt. Our debt is way out of control. Our spending is way out of control. So having that be one of the biggest issues, the financial aspect of what we're facing in this country, having be, a top-tier issue in this campaign, and Ron Paul having spoken about that so often and spoken about that we need to get our financial house in order, I think he is to be commended, and it's to be acknowledged that the time is ripe for people to be considering some of these things about the financial status of this country. So I think that portion of it, of Ron Paul's candidacy, is something that people can relate to. I think that's something that people find interesting and right on. We say, hey, we do believe in limited government, and Ron Paul has been somebody who's been preaching limited government, and therefore, we agree with him on this particular issue. He's right on about this issue. I think I would also probably give him credit for the idea. He'll make slogans about foreign policy issues, broad statements about foreign policy issues. And some of the statements that he makes resonates with the American people, and even more specifically, I'm speaking right now to Christian conservatives as well. When he says things that, why are we giving foreign aid to so many other countries around the world when we could be using the money right here at home, I think that a lot of people, without going all the way to an isolationist type viewpoint, they just think that it's a bit ridiculous, some of the money that we're giving away to other countries. For instance, to be giving foreign aid to China when we're borrowing money from China to do it, obviously this seems hypocritical in the mind of many people and just absurd, and they can resonate with what Ron Paul is saying. And when he says things that, we shouldn't be involved in all of these different skirmishes that take place around the world, that we can't police the entire world. Again, I think that there is some credibility to that. And some people go, that's true. We, can we really be involved in all of these different wars? Should we have really gotten involved in Libya and what was taking place there? And, I think maybe we need to be a little bit more the criteria for getting involved maybe needs to be a little bit more stringent, and we need to look at these things. So all of those different points that Ron Paul makes, I think, are legitimate points and things that he should be commended for. However, there are other points that he makes that I think are really disturbing, or should be disturbing, to the Christian community. And I say to the Christian community because he won this Value Voter Summit straw poll. Now, that in one way shouldn't be of any concern whatsoever to the Christian conservatives, and in another way it should be of a tremendous amount of concern. Let me explain myself. In one way, there seems to be a way that you can game the system on these straw polls, and Ron Paul and his supporters seem to have figured out how to do that. Because they are very zealous, apparently they're willing to wait in line and to flood the number of people that you can have into these straw polls. I know some of his supporters may call in here and take issue with that and say, well, every time he wins, you guys just say that, he was able to, it was kind of fixed, it's not an accurate reflection. But that is the general consensus of people. It hardly even makes the news when he wins these, because people know that there is a way to game that system, and they apparently do that very well. And so in one way, it's not really that concerning that he won the Values Voters straw poll, because he didn't really win it, if you want to put it that way. The majority of people who were actually there at the conservative event, the majority of them say they wouldn't vote for Ron Paul to win that. It was just that a number of his supporters get into the actual straw poll voting part of the thing. And so it's not an accurate reflection. It is concerning, though, on another front, because just when you think of the headline, when you think of a Values Voter Summit, this is the group that has historically represented Christian conservatism. And when you think now that the person who won a poll among Christian conservatives is a person, in my view, who does not have Christian conservative views, that's the part that I think is disturbing. For instance, Ron Paul's views seem to, on a very broad scale, seem to exalt the sovereignty of man to an unhealthy level. He's always preaching and talking about the rights of the individual and just the sovereignty of that individual right, and the complete exclusion of government at all. The limited government is one thing. I fear a out-of-control, wildly spending, deep in debt government. I fear that, and I am opposing it on this radio broadcast in my own personal life and the way that I vote. I am against that, and I strongly feel that it can bring tremendous damage and harm to the United States of America, and even broader than that, to the freedoms that we enjoy here that enable us to preach the gospel with such liberty that we enjoy, have historically enjoyed, and even still enjoy these days. Having said that, though, the only thing that I fear more than an out-of-control government is anarchy. That's what I fear more than anything else. And I fear that the way that Ron Paul speaks about some of these issues is closer more to a secular view of things and a viewpoint where in this over-exaltation of the individual right, of man's rights, lifting up man's rights, I think it tends towards the view of a more of an anarchy in this country. I fear anarchy more than an intrusive government. And I think the biblical record of this would hold that up. You remember during the time of Judges, when things were all helter-skelter and constantly they were doing unspeakable things were taking place, and then God would raise up a judge that would come back in and redeem the people, bring about revival once again among the people. And then they would slip back into this anarchy again that was taking place. Do you remember the phrase that was associated with it there in Judges? It said, every man did that which was right in his own eyes. That's anarchy. You know, that is this over-exaltation of the individual right and this complete disregard for any government whatsoever. See, I think Ron Paul, although he touches this nerve that we have about an over-intrusive government and an overspending government, he takes it too far that he doesn't seem to want any government at all. He wants a guard. He wants the government to be a defense of America. And by the way, even in that view, I don't agree with the way that he puts it forward because he sees no role in foreign policy whatsoever. It's a very isolationist viewpoint. We just stay over here in our country and we, you know, surround it with our military force, and you know, we just hope that nobody, if they do come and attack us, that would be the only case that we would ever get involved with anyone. But in that viewpoint, I don't think that he has given the accurate view of what God intends for government. Remember, the name of it is actually called government. You know, there's a part that they're supposed to be not just a guard, but they're supposed to be governing in this country. They're supposed to be making decisions and laws that promote good lifestyles in America, that restrain evil and promote good. Now, right away, somebody says, well, wait a second, I don't want the government promoting good. They're not they can't promote good in the world. Yes, they can. There is such a thing as the common grace of God, that God does enable even unsaved people to do good things. We understand that. We don't posit the good in them, but we exalt God for the good things that he allows them to do. And there is a way that we can restrain evil. Let me, Ron Paul's view on some of these things is, I think he has an incorrect view of evil itself and the nature of man himself. I don't think he quite understands the idea of total depravity and about the capacity that people have to do evil. He wants to do away with, decriminalize drug use. He thinks that the money that's being spent on going after drug users and drug dealers is a waste of time, and that it doesn't—it's not something that the government should be involved in. He wants to decriminalize prostitution and these types of things. I think that is wrongheaded. And I think that the government does play a positive role in restraining evil in our society and promoting that which is good. Now, the Heritage Foundation has tons of statistics about how these elements in our society, just how something like prostitution, how it actually, if it was legalized, how it would have these dramatic impacts upon our society, how that if the government wasn't involved in promoting families, as Rick Santorum talked about last night on the during the debate, there's a tremendous positive impact on society as a whole when the government offers incentives for people to have families and have more children, and to understand that raising children costs more money, and for us to give incentives for families to have more children. It's important for us to, you know, to be increasing and growing in our population with our people here in the United States. There are many, many benefits to all of that. And I just refer you to the Heritage Foundation. You can go out there and read the many studies that they do on these types of issues. So Ron Paul's view of this, where he just wants to, you know, that just let everybody do whatever anybody wants to do, I don't think that that's a position that a Christian conservative can really align with. I don't think that's our view of government whatsoever. I don't think that's what the founding fathers had in mind. I don't think we put government in control and just leave government to itself either. I think that there are checks and balances there, and we have to have there's authority there versus anarchy, and we have to have authority in position. The Bible is big on authority and having these different spheres with the right authority in each one of these spheres. In the church, in the family, in society as a whole. We need to have authority structures within those. But there's also accountability there. If we don't like what government is doing, we have mechanisms in place where we can do something about it. We can vote the bums out. We can influence their decisions. We can say to them, this is what is important to us, and we want you to vote along this line. If you want our vote, then this is what we want you to do, and that's completely legitimate. We want to, you know, hold them accountable to what we would like to see in our government. So I think, you know, Ron Paul just wants to dismiss a lot of this. He has a view that is lacking about foreign policy. I couldn't believe his comment again last night. I mean, he seemed to be defending the prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. Somebody referred to them as, you know, that they were prisoners. He jumped in right away. Wait a second, they haven't even been charged with a crime. I mean, does he really want to be the defense attorney for the enemy combatants that have been arrested and are now being housed? They were arrested off the battlefield, Congressman. These people have committed themselves to killing us. He doesn't seem to understand this. In the previous debates, one of the other ones, he seemed to justify what Al-Qaeda did in attacking this country. He said, well, we ended up putting bases in Saudi Arabia, and if we wouldn't have put those bases there in Saudi Arabia, then we wouldn't have gotten them mad and they wouldn't have come over here and attacked us. Now, you really want to defend and say that it is a moral equivalent to us as a country striking a deal with another sovereign country, Saudi Arabia, where we come to an agreement that we can put bases in their area, and then a fringe element within that country, the radical Islamists, don't like it, and you want to really say that it's justifiable then for them to come over and kill 3,000 innocent Americans and probably well over 10,000 total what they've killed on the battlefield and other places? I mean, that's a pretty poor position to find yourself in. And it's those types of bizarre views that are associated with Ron Paul, where I say that he just is not consistent enough. He's got some small elements where we say, you know, limited government, yes. But then he wants to do away. He says, hey, I'll save $1 trillion, and I'm going to do away with 5 cabinet positions. I mean, the guy takes a sledgehammer to the process here, right? And, you know, let's just go in, and I'm going to just wipe it all out. And I think he's naive in a lot of these things. The president was naive like this. You know, the president thought that he could just go over and talk to these people that were against us, and he'll just sit down and, you know, have a coffee with them or something and talk to them and tell them, you know, what great people we are, and then they'll stop attacking us. Ron Paul seems to be under the same illusion that if we just don't go put a base over in their area, they'll leave us alone. Not true. There's such a thing as evil in the world, and they have committed themselves to taking our life. And over here, the president, you know, I am going to close Guantanamo Bay. I'm going to try the people there in New York City. Well, guess what? It's not as easy as what you think. And Ron Paul thinks, his first day on the job, I'm going to get rid of 5 cabinet positions. Really? You know, you really think you're going to get the type of support that's necessary to do these things? So, you know, I just don't, when we think about the champion of the Christian conservative position, Ron Paul has seemed to tweak his language a little bit. He's now backed off on getting rid of the Fed completely, which was a mainstay of the diet of Ron Paul's politics. He's now saying that just we need to put checks and balances. We need to be able to, you know, more authority over them, to watch them and make sure that they don't get out. Well, that's the same thing I'm saying. But he realized that there's a lot of people out there who feel that this is an over-the-top position that he has on just getting rid of things. And so now he's starting to lessen some of this language. But I'm afraid that his view on these things probably has not changed enough to, you know, to accept it as being legitimate. So anyways, I think, you know, even his position on Christian things, I know that he's pro-life and he's voted consistently pro-life. I understand that. I was a little bit not overly thrilled with that most of his opposition to abortion seemed to be that it didn't belong at the federal level and that it needed to be pushed to the state level. He seemed to emphasize that. Now, maybe he's talking about as just a way of doing away with Roe v. Wade. But I didn't think he went strong enough to make the moral argument for abortion being wrong. So I wasn't too fond with that. His view of the church seems to be that the church should be taking care of the poor. I heard him say that rather than the government doing it, the church should be doing that. But he doesn't seem to want to take the belief system that we have within the church and allow it to play any stronger role in our decision-making on politics as a whole. He has a much more secularist viewpoint of the church bringing any sort of moral issue into our policy-making whatsoever. And so I'm not comfortable with where he's at in that position as well. I think that his role of the church is a marginal role. The church is just, you know, yeah, you can take care of the poor and people should be able to go to whatever church they want to and so forth. But my view of the interaction of the church and the scripture and the things of God into our society and into our politics is much different than that. I'm for looking at every single policy issue, bringing it back to the touchstone of God's word and seeing what God's word has to say about it, and then from that position speaking about these issues. I don't think that's what he's talking about. That would be a true Christian conservative position, and I don't think that that's what he's talking about whatsoever. So there's some of my opposition. Like I said, there's much there to commend Ron Paul for, but I think that there's awful lot to be concerned about. Remember this, you know, we wanted change real bad last time, right? All kinds of people wanted change. They demonized George Bush, and by the end of it, it doesn't really matter what sort of change Barack Obama was talking about. Anything would be better than what we had. Well, we can see where that mentality led us. We've got to be careful here. We want change again. We don't like the current occupant in the White House. I agree. His policies are damaging this country, and from a Christian perspective, it's going to hurt our liberty to be able to get the gospel out. We need to oppose him, expose him, and oppose him at every point that we find him deficient with the Word of God. But that said, let's not just have change for change's sake. There is something worse, and anarchy would be worse than what we have now. And so we have to be very careful that we don't get ourselves into a position where we are like the folks down there on Wall Street, you know, that are occupying Wall Street. We don't want that taking place in our country. We have to be very, very careful about who comes in next. Here's what I think about it. Remember this. The Lord Jesus Christ said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." We'll see you.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia. Christian Talk 660, WLFJ, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lisa Brady. Dirty